Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Hollywood caves, no strike at IATSE. Stagehands reach a tentative deal. Joe Manchin in the coal industry, what may happen to Biden's aggressive agenda? And today on the show, the Texas AFL-CIO and the National Council on Occupational Safety. Welcome to the Monday, October 18th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. Len Aguilar is going to be our first guest on the show. No stranger. He's been on several times. Len is the first Latino to hold a top office in the Texas Labor Federation. He began his career in labor as a pre-apprentice with the United Association of Plumbers and Pipefitters, Local 142 out of San Antonio. Worked his way up the ladder, winning election to several offices in that union. Became executive director of the Texas Building and Construction Trades Council, and more recently, political director of the Southwest Pipe Trades Association, which represents plumbers, pipefitters, welders, HVAC technicians in several states, three states altogether. TexasAFLCIO.org is their website, and they represent about 235,000 members there. One of the things we're going to talk about is the vaccine. You may know this. The governor of Texas, Greg Abbott, recently signed an executive order outlawing vaccine mandates, which is a direct conflict with what President Biden's federal vaccine mandate is all about. A lot of businesses are saying, you know what, it doesn't matter. We want to protect our workers. And some big companies are kind of fighting what's going on with the leadership in Texas. We'll touch on that. We'll talk about the trades down there, how they're handling all of this. And we'll just get into the politics. You know, we're talking about a right-to-work state. And we're talking about a lot of money coming from the federal government, from the Biden administration. $16 billion in federal American Rescue Plan funds. And all states are divvying up this pot of money right now. Some states, well, they're doing the right thing. They're being progressive. They're trying to create jobs. Other states, and I don't know where Texas is on this, they're building prisons. Let's just lock up some more people with federal money. Oy, oy, oy. So Len's going to be our first guest. Marcy Goldstein Gelb will be joining us later in the show. She is co-executive director of National COSH. That's the National Council for Occupational Safety and Health. We have quoted them on the show many, many times. NationalCosh.org is their website. Marcy, as I indicated, is co-director. She's had that position for 5 years, has been a leader and strategist in the occupational safety and health and economic justice movements for over 25 years. She serves on the faculty of the Harvard Trade Union Program at the Harvard Law School. Her work has been devoted to engaging and impacting workers most impacted by dangerous working conditions, lower wage, workers of color, immigrants, women, and youth. She has co-authored a number of groundbreaking studies highlighting the intersection of occupational health and safety with other urgent public health epidemics, including sexual harassment, immigration, even obesity. Prior to her work at National COSH, she was the director of the Massachusetts Coalition for Occupational Safety and Health, MassCOSH, where she developed and founded Teens Lead at Work, a youth-led initiative devoted to ending child labor abuses, and the Immigrant Worker Center, which engages immigrants as leaders in advocating for safe, just working conditions, as well as protective policies. She's a fighter. She's a fighter. And the main thing she's going to talk about is something we touched on Friday. And pretty much in a nutshell, Biden is stopping these ICE raids. ICE is the Immigration Customs Enforcement that was so profound during the Trump administration, where you have many like meatpacking plants. All of a sudden, boom, here comes ICE, and 75% of your workforce is gone, deported. Well, the leaders of National Kosh offered support and guidance from the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, which called for an end to those mass immigration raids. And this would not have happened if it wasn't for people like Marcy. So she's going to talk about the game plan that she and her team put together to put an end to this. The other issue we're going to get into is the extreme heat. We've had some crazy weather in parts of the country that are usually not that hot. You may recall what happened in the Pacific Northwest some months ago, where it's usually 65, 70 degrees. Oregon, Washington State, I'm talking about, was 115 to 120 degrees. And this was right in the middle of blueberry picking season. And the people were dropping dead in the fields from the heat because they weren't getting adequate breaks. Bottled water, things like that, which they needed, they weren't getting. So the Biden administration is moving forward on that, and Marcy will talk on that as well. So she'll be our second guest right here on America's Workforce. Well, an 11th-hour deal was reached late Saturday, averting a strike. Film and television crews that would have seen some 60,000 behind-the-scenes workers walk off their jobs and would have frozen production in Hollywood and across the United States. After days of marathon talks, representatives from the International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees and from the studios and entertainment companies who employ them reached a 3-year contract agreement before today's strike deadline. They were going to go on strike at like midnight tonight, Pacific time. This is a Hollywood ending, union president Matt Loeb said. Our members stood firm. Now, the workers still must vote to approve the deal, but the strike has been called off with the tentative deal, and many in Hollywood celebrated the news. Comedian, actor, and writer Patton Oswalt said on Twitter, good news for IATSE for standing your ground, and don't forget, we got your back anytime you need us. Another actor, comic, and writer, Yvette Nicole Brown, tweeted, union strong, along with a link to a story reporting the agreement. Jennifer Garner said on Instagram, congratulations, IATSE brothers and sisters. The effect of a strike would have been immediate, with crews not only on long-term productions, but daily series, including network talk shows, walking off their jobs. Shows with short turnarounds, like soap operas, would also have immediate effects. The union represents cinematographers, camera operators, set designers, carpenters, hair and makeup artists, and many others. So these are the people. These are, I call them the unsung heroes. You know, we hear about the actors and the actresses and the supporting actors and actresses, but these are the people that glue it all together. Now, a full draft of the agreement has not been released. However, some details are leaking out. You know how that goes. Among the provisions, a 3% annual wage increase, significant investment in health and pension plans, higher pay for streaming content, a minimum of 10 hours between shifts, at least 54 hours off on weekends, improved sick leave benefits, and diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives. So that's a step in the right direction. Some are saying, come on, 3%? That doesn't even cover inflation. So we'll see what happens. Again, this is a tentative deal. The rank and file must ratify the agreement before it takes effect. They will not vote directly on the contract. Listen to this. The ratification process will instead be conducted through an indirect electoral college-style voting system. in which members are organized at the local level, and each local votes on a majority rule election. The votes are then tabulated according to each local, and the agreement need only be approved by a bare majority of locals to be ratified. It's scary when they say electoral college. I don't know about that one. But anyway, that's their process. We have other IOTC news today. Theatrical and Stage employs local 22 stagehands who work at the Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts in Washington have ratified a new 3-year contract there with a raise and enhance opportunities for the union to grow. This covers stagehands at the Kennedy Center's present stages and adds 2 more people, and also will cover stagehands the center hires for its new Reach expansion project, completed while the pandemic closed the center, along with other performing arts venues around the nation. So good news there. You know, in that situation, the center's bosses proposed a 40% pay cut. Are you kidding me? Jeez. So hats off to that IOTC local. There's a lot of IOTCs around the country, and many of them work in television and news production in various cities across the country. Well, in political news, a program to replace the nation's coal and gas-fired power plants with renewable wind, solar, and nuclear energy, the single most critical part of Biden's ambitious climate agenda, which included $150 billion to incentivize utility companies to switch from burning fossil fuels to renewable energy sources, is likely to be dropped from the $3.5 trillion budget reconciliation bill, all because of opposition from Senator Joe Manchin, who has deep ties to the coal industry. He has received more campaign donations from fossil fuel companies than any other senator. And perhaps more damningly, he also profits from the industry. Manchin owns up to $5 million in stock in a coal brokerage firm that he founded in 1988, which is now controlled by his son. And he made nearly $500,000 in dividends from his stock ownership last year, according to his Senate Financial Disclosure Report. Now, Democrats are attempting to rewrite the legislation without the key clean energy program and instead piece together alternatives like a carbon tax that would cut emissions, although these alternatives will face their own set of political challenges. Boy, there is something really, really wrong with our political process when you have senators. And he's not alone. Let's be honest. I mean, they're all over the place where they have ties to certain industries and they're voting accordingly to support their own interests. All right, we have to break. Len Aguilar of the Texas Labor Federation coming up next.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland at 216-881-1802. Call Music Talent of Cleveland as your dependable source for professional musicians in Northeast Ohio. Union musicians add harmony to weddings, elegance to parties, and uplifting music for all events. Music Talent of Cleveland contracts solo and ensemble musicians as well as bands and orchestras for single engagements. So hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland today. 216-881-1802.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find more at oh.aft.org. And Melissa Cropper, president of the Ohio Federation, will be joining us on the show tomorrow. Right now, let's go down to Texas. And joining us once again is Len Aguilar. Len recently was promoted to Secretary Treasurer of the Texas Labor Federation, TexasAFLCIO.org. And that is one state that's getting a lot of news. A lot of news. Hey, Len, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
No, I appreciate it. I appreciate it. How are y'all doing?
We're doing well. I have to check in with you because your governor, my God, is garnering a lot of national and international attention. Let's start off with this vaccine situation. He signed an executive order, what was it, about a week or week and a half ago, outlawing vaccine mandates. Now, this is in direct conflict with the federal government, and they're probably proud to do that. What's going on with the politics down there? Let's start there. Go ahead.
Wow. Okay. The politics, it's a mess right now. I mean, just being talking about the governor or talking about what the governor's done has just been it's trying to keep up with him and him going farther right every day, it seems like, and running for his reelection already. And that's a lot of what's going on here. He's just going farther and farther to the right. Trying to get to the finish line of his primary elections. It's unfortunate because when he's doing this, he's playing with people's lives and futures here in the state of Texas, and not looking to actually do any not looking to do any good work to help the state of Texas recover from this. I think the last time we talked, it mentioned the disasters and from the freeze, earlier this year to the handling of the first round of COVID or the first wave of COVID. And now we're into this Delta variant wave, I guess you could say, right? Or getting out of it, it seems like, hopefully. I mean, he's just dropped the ball at every opportunity to do right for the state. And it's just looking out for himself. And it's unfortunate for the rest of us here in the state who are trying to worry about the important issues, the kitchen table issues, and making sure we are all safe and healthy at the end of the day.
So what's the vaccine rate in the state of Texas right now?
It's getting better. It's getting better. I mean, I honestly do not know the exact numbers, but they are going up, and that is a positive for sure. I think people, even though the majority of folks in the state had gotten both vaccinations, or if they had to get the two shots, or if they had to just I guess it's the J&J, which was just the one. A majority of the folks had already gotten it. There was still a big group of the folks in the state that hadn't gotten it. But I think after this Delta variant, people started to wake up and realize the numbers that were coming out of the hospital. I mean, I think it was basically like 7 out of 10 if you were taken. That were in the ICUs or in the hospitals, 7 out of 10 were unvaccinated, and the numbers don't lie. So the numbers are going up. I don't know the exact numbers right now, but the numbers are going up, and that's a good sign. Unfortunately, hopefully we can stay in front of it, and we don't have another variant, or we don't have another, since we're getting into the winter season, I guess, we don't have another surge of this stuff.
Yeah. What about among our union brothers and sisters? And I know you could speak to the trades because you come from the plumbers and pipe fitters in the UA. Well, let's start there. Let's use that union and go take a look at other unions in the state of Texas. How are they reacting to all this?
I mean, right now, I think it's safe to say that there's a pretty good pretty good division across the board as far as the vaccines go. Some folks are just not comfortable, and that's unfortunate. With all the reinforcement that we've gotten and from the different levels of government, from the federal government to the state government, because even for the bad that Governor Abbott has done, he is out there saying, yes, it is a good thing to get the vaccine. It is a good thing to go do it, but you don't have to. And unfortunately, that's the thing that's confusing a lot of folks, in our opinion, is if we would just have that authority figure saying, yes, go get that vaccine, let's make sure and get it done, and let's get out of this, and let's get back to normal, or whatever, as close we can to normal, then we could start moving forward. But I do think our, just like in everything right now politically, we got folks that are in favor of it, and we got folks that are against them. And at the end of the day, it's our job to try to take care of and protect the health and safety, I guess you can say, of all our members and not, you know, even the folks that aren't members, just general public, just the working folks of the state of Texas.
Len, let me ask you about the reaction from some of the businesses there. I know Southwest Airlines, for one, is based in Texas, and there's a conflict with the governor because they want their employees to be vaccinated. What do you hear? Is there some pushback on behalf of some of the businesses to your governor there?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. I mean, as you know, we are in a third special session here in Austin. And just this past week, like you said, or a week and a half ago, however long it's been, he just added a special item again for the vaccines and outlawing the mandates, I guess. And that drew a lot of attention, not just from everyday citizens, but from the business community, like you said. He wants to say everybody has the right to choose and everybody can do what they want to do, but then he wants to tell people that what they have to do and tell the businesses as well. So he's trying to walk back on some of that from the way it looks like, but no, he did get some serious pushback from that, and the business community let him know about it, and they let the state legislature know about it as well.
Len, let me ask you about employment in general. I saw just last week it was reported that a record amount of people quit their jobs in August. Many of them frontline workers in restaurants, hospitality, police officers. I could go on. And they're just a lot of low wage industries. I want to throw that in there. And they're saying, you know what? It's not worth it anymore. What's the situation in Texas there? And this is probably a good opportunity to track them to the trades. I'd like to get your response to that.
Well, I mean, it's unfortunate that the pandemic and it has brought this out. But for however long it's been now, forever how many years it's been, it's been that we haven't taken care of the essential worker. We haven't taken, you know, we've just kind of ignored the essential worker and the folks that take care of our groceries or the police and fire and the EMS or our teachers, those folks that, you know, we've been going to work every day and our members have been going to work every day. And it shouldn't have taken a pandemic to bring out the essential part of things. We've been essential from day one. And now people are getting tired of it. And you can see from all the actions that are going on across the state, and from actions, I mean, the different strikes and the different things that are going on. People are tired. Workers are tired. And this is a great opportunity here in Texas and across the country to let workers know that we're there. And this is an avenue that we can take to help secure those things that everybody's looking for, which are those better wages, those benefits, you know, that health insurance for yourself and your family, and a decent retirement when you're not able to work anymore. So right now in Texas and across the country, I think it's evident that workers are tired. We're tired of seeing these corporations and these CEOs and these executives make all this money on the backs of us as the essential workers. And we're letting them know about it. And we're proud to stand with those that are fighting for theirs.
I keep saying there's like 60 million people in America that are willing to join a union if they wouldn't be intimidated in joining a union, in organizing, in speaking out at work. And that's just another reason why we need the PRO Act. Let me ask you this, because of what's going on in the state of Texas, is the Texas AFL-CIO like beefing up their organizing department, spreading the word, saying this is an opportunity, let's seize the moment? Is that happening?
It is to an extent. I mean, it's difficult to get over into every aspect that we need to, mentioning the PRO Act or referencing maybe the two other pieces that are out there, the infrastructure and reconciliation. There's a lot of things at the federal level that need to be done, but at the Texas AFL-CIO, that is one of the things that we are talking about, and that's one of the initiatives that we are trying to get going is helping support and figure out how to get organizing, because you know as well as I do is that if you're trying to organize in the trades, it doesn't work the same way as you're trying to organize in a school district, or if you're trying to work and organize in a manufacturing setting or in a shop setting. So we got to figure out how to make those work. Yeah, they're all connected. At the end of the day, it's to secure better wages, working conditions, and all that. But we got to figure out how to connect those dots, and that is something we definitely are working on. Yes, sir.
I like that. All right, Len, I got to take a break. You can stay with us for another segment here on the show.
Oh yeah, you got it.
All right, TexasAFLCIO.org. Len Aguilar, Secretary Treasurer of the Texas Labor Federation, joining us, and you can follow him on Twitter, TexasAFLCIO. Marcy Goldstein Gelb, Co-Director of the National COSH, that's the Council on Occupational Safety. She'll be joining us later in the show. And recently, the Biden administration announced that they are going to put an end to those ICE raids. She'll talk about that and more back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you were exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at KellyandFerraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro. Trial lawyers.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, we are available on 5 platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. When you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We always appreciate a 5-star rating. Let's go back to our live line and rejoin Len Aguilar. Len is the Secretary Treasurer of the Texas Labor Federation, TexasAFLCIO.org. Some good news for a change. Talk to me about what happened here in San Antonio. This is a national program, I might add. It's called the Housing and Investment Trust, and it's something that the AFL-CIO started many, many years ago. So what's the story from Texas, Len?
Yeah, I appreciate it. This is something that we're proud of. In San Antonio, Texas, the Building Trades is a proud owner on their housing side of the Building Trades. And of the Granada Homes, it's a high-rise downtown San Antonio on the Riverwalk, and was created back in 66, I believe, by the Building Trades for affordable housing, right, and that type of thing. And off of a conversation at the Building Trades Convention, I guess maybe 4 years ago now, I came across a gentleman, Ted Chandler, from the Housing Investment Trust. And from that one conversation and then, you know, hundreds of others from many other people, we've been able to get to the point of taking this property, which is owned, again, a union-owned property, using those union pension dollars to help reinvest into the local community, rehab that facility or rehab that building, take care of the residents, make sure they're still being taken care of and have a place to live and stay during the rehab, and then get them back into a completely refurbished and up-to-date building, making sure we're taking care of renewable type of things, making sure that the energy efficiency is up to par with what we need nowadays and things of that nature. But that is something that we are definitely proud of, and We actually just had broke ground a couple of weeks ago. So very proud of that, very proud of the work that everybody's done. But a big thank you to the AFL-CIO Housing Investment Trust, also to the Bank of Labor and Joe Schoonover, who was very helpful at the very beginning of the process years ago, you know, or like I said, 3-4 years ago. So, yes, sir, that is something good and good news that we don't often hear from the anti-union state of Texas, but proud of our relationship there in San Antonio with local officials and the state delegation, and we're able to get some work done.
And that'll be 100% union then? Is that right?
ELA on that, yes, sir. Project labor agreement, hiring local contractors, and doing the work the way it should be done, taking care of our local communities and taking care of our community folks. Yes,
and
sir.
I'm so glad that you're doing that kind of thing, because there's a building boom going on in America, and unfortunately, what they're building, most people cannot afford. I mean, big homes, high rises, luxury condos, that kind of stuff. Now, this is affordable housing. Now, you said they just broke ground. Any idea how long this is going to take, Len, before they start moving in?
Yes, sir. I'm sorry about that. We're looking at just about a year, just shy of a year and a half of getting it done. It's a work in progress. Folks are still living in the building, but we're taking care of the way I understand. Shane Den, our local building trades rep there at the Granada, is taking care of business and helping making sure everything stays on track. And we try not to make it uncomfortable for the residents there. But yes, sir, I think within about a year and a half now.
Good, good, good. So are we going to do this in various cities in Texas? I mean, you got a pretty large state there, and we need more affordable housing. What's the game plan?
That's it. That's the game plan. We want to try to see where we can leverage our resources, not just with the Housing Investment Trust or the Bank of Labor, like I talked about just a minute ago, but with what we do and on the building trade side of things. This is, we build things and we fix these buildings. And with this boom that's going on, like it's important, because there isn't affordable housing for everybody across the state or across the country. And this is, it seems to be an initiative across the state of Texas to help secure affordable housing. And we want to be a partner in that. And we want to show that. And hopefully we can utilize the Granada Homes and use that as a model of how we can get it done to take care of our local residents and help on that affordable housing end of things.
Just gave me a great idea. We got to get the national folks on the show and talk more about this. When we've had Rich Trumka, the late great Rich Trumka, he talked extensively about this with me. And it's a great program, Housing Investment Trust, on behalf of the AFL-CIO and the building trades. All good stuff. All right, let's talk about this American Rescue Plan money. And I saw this on your website. I guess there's like, what, more than $16 billion in funds. And I know a lot of states and municipalities are trying to divvy up this money. I know there's a tug of war going on. I don't know what state. It might be Alabama. They said that they want to build a prison with it, which I'm not surprised. What's going on in Texas with this money, Len?
We gave our recommendations. We came up with our recommendations for the legislature. I guess it was last week. Everything is kind of a blur right now, because we're getting into the last couple of days of the special, and unfortunately still having to deal with these gerrymandered maps, be it from the State Board of Education to across the board, just to this to yesterday or this weekend, working on the congressional maps. But we gave our recommendations, and the recommendations, I believe, are there on the website as well. But it's just a matter of taking care of the workers of the state of Texas. Again, those essential workers. It sounds good when they're trying to, when those electors are trying to make themselves seem like they are with everybody and they're trying to support everybody. But then when we ask for the things that we need help on child care. We need to take care of our essential workers in that aspect. If people can't take care of their kids or have their kids taken care of so they can go to work, then that adds to that problem that we're in, not just in the state, but across the country. And a list, a laundry list of other things of how we can take care of the everyday folks in the state of Texas. And unfortunately, it doesn't seem like that's going to happen. The corporations and the businesses are going to be taken care of. And again, those essential workers that are so valuable and so good for a soundbite for those electeds are going to be left out in the cold again.
If you go to the Texas Labor Federation website, you can see what Len's talking about and where that money should go. Premium pay for essential workers, create a retroactive hazard pay fund administered to provide retroactive premium pay to workers in essential critical infrastructure. Funding should be made available to workers, not just to employers. All workers should be eligible to receive assistance through the fund, even if they previously received assistance, and funding should be prioritized for low-income eligible workers who do essential work. And there's so many in that category. There's a lot of components to it, and it's unfortunate that you have to deal with some draconian lawmakers there, but you live in Texas. I mean, you got to deal with the hand that you're dealt with. You mentioned gerrymandering. Is there a tug of war going on with that right now? I know it is in the state of Ohio where we record the show. Is that the situation there too?
Yeah, no, it is. The gerrymandering is the maps and the cutting of the maps is just something that unfortunately it's going to be, you know, they're going to be going to court on these things. With the population growth in the state of Texas over the last 10 years and it being, you know, the numbers, 95%, I believe, is what I remember hearing this weekend off of the floor debates and of minority growth in the state of Texas. But yet the minority districts are nowhere to be found. And yes, sir. I mean, there's just no way no simple way to talk about what they're doing other than they're just trying to hold on to power and keep themselves in power and pack the Democratic districts with more Democrats so they can go ahead and then bring in those rural districts to take care of their Republican friends, I guess you can say. So it's an unfortunate thing. It shouldn't be that way, but we're going to keep going and we're going to keep plugging away and keep trying to educate our members and educate the general public on what's going on and be a resource for everybody here. We got to keep moving forward without a doubt.
Yeah. And Texas garnered national attention when the Democrats, I guess, got on planes and flew over to Washington to hide out when they were trying to pass that voter restrictive law. Now, that's all said and done. Is that passed and signed by the governor right now?
Everything is pretty much done. It's unfortunate, like you said, when they had to leave and use that, I guess, that resource or that tool. How do you say the tool in the toolbox? When they got together and decided to leave the state. I mean, they just weren't leaving the state. They were leaving their families. They were leaving their jobs. They were doing everything and anything that they could. And I tip my hat to those reps that did that. It wasn't easy to be gone for that period of time. I mean, for any of us to be gone and away from home and away from our lives for that long is difficult. And it's something that, again, trying to bring attention, it's time for we need the federal folks to step up a little bit. I don't want to speak ill of anybody or talk about anybody in a bad way. But I mean, we do need some help, and not just here in Texas, but across the country. Like you said, I mean, you were saying in Ohio that there's issues with the maps that are going on there and how they're trying to do the work there. So, we do need help just in every aspect of the thing. And the federal government seems to be front and center right now. A lot of folks are looking to the federal government to help take care of a lot of these problems, and we'll see how that works out.
Len, it sounds like it's no longer majority rule. Instead, we have a minority trying to control the majority in the country, especially in states like Texas, which is so unfortunate. Len, we're going to leave it on that note. TexasAFLCIO.org, and that's also their Twitter handle, TexasAFLCIO. They're also on Facebook as well. So you hang in there, my friend, and we'll stay in touch with you. Hopefully better days ahead, all right?
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Len Aguilar, Secretary-Treasurer of the Texas Labor Federation, 240,000 members almost, 460 affiliates and locals. And right now we have to take a break. Marcy Goldstein-Gelb will be joining us when we come back, and she is with the National Council for Occupational Safety and Health.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with prostate, breast, or any other cancer after taking Zantac? You may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at KellyAndFerraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And of course, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number two right now. Welcome back to the show. It's been a while. Marcy Goldstein Gelb is co-director of National COSH. That's the National Council for Occupational Safety and Health. And this is a passion of hers. She's going to talk about some changes in the Biden administration. All good here. Marcy, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me today. It's nice to speak with you.
Why don't you give our listeners a quick rundown? I know you have another executive director, Jessica Martinez. She works on the West Coast. You work out of Boston. National COSH, I know you've been with them since 2016. Why don't you give me a rundown on the organization? Go ahead.
Absolutely. Well, we are a network of labor activists, community members, and worker health and safety professionals who have a mission, a very simple mission of ensuring that every worker can go and earn their living and return home with their health and well-being intact and their money in their pockets. So in this pandemic, I think it's become patently obvious why we have been having this mission since since OSHA was enacted, the absolute urgent need for workers to have their safety and health protected. We have coalitions, COSH groups all over the country. There's 25, and they bring together folks in communities, but we have a broader umbrella group that brings together individual labor activists as well called the Protecting Workers Alliance.
Very good. So you're the worker's voice, and we need a worker's voice in America, long overdue. And Biden is moving the needle in the right direction, no question. Let's talk about what happened last week. And it's my understanding, and this comes from the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, calling for an end to mass immigration raids. And there were many of them over the years, especially during the Trump administration. And I understand that your organization had quite a role in that. Talk to me about it.
Well, I have to say that, unfortunately, this has been a very longstanding issue before the Trump administration, that employers have systematically and strategically sought out undocumented immigrants, knowing that they had the least voice in the workplace, because should they speak up, they could be silenced, they could be retaliated against, and therefore they could be doing the dirty work of employers, free from, any sort of consequences. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, workers have been silenced, afraid to report before or after tragedies. And what that results in is when there is a tragedy, they can't even participate in investigations. And, you know, it certainly in particular, the prior administration fomented anti-immigrant sentiments, and ICE was used by employers to silence workers even more. And worse, ICE itself, that's the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE itself helped silence workers in cases like the Hard Rock Cafe in Louisiana, when a worker witness to the deadly collapse was deported. So this is has been a very high priority for the Kosh Network and our allies. We made it a priority to call on the Biden administration long before he was in office as part of his platform during the transition. Once he was in, we made it part of our what's called a national agenda for worker safety and health. We held a town hall with the OSHA chief, Jim Frederick. We met with the Secretary of Labor, Marty Walsh. We said, this is something you can do and must be a priority. And what we asked the administration to do was to basically stop any ICE activity during a Department of Labor investigation and have a very clear agreement with the Department of Homeland Security that they will absolutely not engage during an investigation. And on the contrary, in fact, make it easier for witnesses to participate in reporting and in, you know, speaking out about labor crimes by making it easier for them to stay in this country. And then in addition, take swift action against employers who use immigration as a threat or means of intimidation. We were extremely pleased when last week, in fact, the administration took a very important first step in that direction. They announced that they are freezing mass ICE actions. They are going to focus on punishing employers, not workers, which basically levels the playing field for the employers that are doing good things that aren't exploiting workers. And yeah, they're going to ensure that workers who speak up will have protections before and during investigations. This is pretty groundbreaking. It goes well beyond what took place under the Obama administration.
Yeah, this is a game changer, no doubt. When you say punishing employers when they're abusing the laws, what kind of ramifications are we talking about there? What can happen to these employers?
Well, and that's why we have said this is a critical step in the right direction, but we're not done. We need to make sure that what those repercussions are significant. So the question is, if an employer has illegally taken actions, we want to know what is that? What exactly does that mean? Certainly, if an employer has failed to pay workers their wages due, regardless of immigration status, if an employer has put a worker in unsafe conditions that can or does result in harm, we want to make sure that the penalties are swift and severe. So those are the sort of things that we think should be high on the priority list, really being a deterrent. And of course, if an employer even considers or takes any steps towards retaliating against a worker who speaks up and exploits their immigration status, again, we want to see that swift action, because that is going to send a message that it's not tolerated, you cannot use immigration status, and it will, it'll be a game changer for the way employers act.
I've been saying on this show, we have a new sheriff in town, and that sheriff, well, it could be Joe Biden, it could be Marty Walsh. I mean, the right people are in place in Washington to make things happen for the workers, and that's so important, so important. I want to talk about this extreme heat. You know, we've got some issues in this country where workers, many of them immigrants, and I just recall the story out of the Pacific Northwest where, I mean, it's usually 65, 70 degrees, and it was, what was it, like 120? I mean, come on. And these workers were in the field pretty much dropping dead. I know your organization was very, very vocal about this. And as I remember, the response was, yeah, I know this is a big issue. And they said it's going to take some time. And I guess they are starting to move in the right direction on that. Can you fill us in?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that the background, as you mentioned, is that you know, people are aware that the temperatures are rising fairly substantially, that we've had the hottest, you know, months of summer, you know, all summer long. And, you know, there's been just far too many workers that, you know, we become aware of those that have lost their lives on the job, and there have been many, but so many others that are not counted that have become very ill from heat exposure. And, you know, it's not only those that are outdoors, it's those that are indoors as well. There was an example in New Jersey of and you know, made worse during the pandemic because they turned off fans to avoid sort of spreading. They were, you know, concerned about the effect of the fans on COVID. And as a result, a worker died of heat stroke. So, again, it's a really significant issue. And something that's been brought up for a long time, as you've mentioned, workers have organized locally. There's been some local ordinances that have passed. There's been good work in places like, you know, as usual, California and Washington, but never really significant advances on the federal level. And it's been clear in our conversations with the head of OSHA, as well as the Secretary of Labor, that this is something that they want to move. They're going to move it as quickly as they can. Usually these things take, you know, 7-8 years, and then you never know if it's going to pass, if it's going to get through. There's talk about trying to get it through during the first administration, if possible, you know, the first 4 years. So that's pretty significant. And then, you know, there's other steps that they're taking to, you know, they've created this multi-prong approach to try to address and protect workers in the interim.
When you talk about this stuff, Marcy, OSHA, which is the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, is grossly understaffed. Are you getting any information out of this administration that they're going to beef up? Because I recall a statistic, and this was some years back, that it would take like once every 190 years to inspect every business in the country today. Some ridiculous figure like that. Are they I mean, they're doing the right things, but are they beefing up staff right now, to your knowledge?
Well, they are trying to beef up staff with existing resources because they're woefully understaffed. They don't even have a head of OSHA because, you know, I mean, they have an interim, and Jim Frederick is wonderful, but they've got, you know, Doug Parker in the wings who's waiting to be confirmed. So that's a good start. And then in addition, there was some resources for OSHA put into one of the recent reconciliation bills. So there's definitely efforts to bring more resources to OSHA. It desperately needs it. And really, the if you're going to be a watchdog agency for the life of our workforce, the well-being of our workforce, and especially, you know, became patently clear the critical need for OSHA in the midst of a pandemic, then they need to have the resources to have really a robust staffing.
Marcy Goldstein-Gelb, co-director of National COSH, that's the National Council for Occupational Safety and Health. This is an organization that links the efforts of local worker health and safety coalitions in communities all across the United States, and they're doing great work. You can also check them out on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. It's at National COSH. On Instagram, too, I see. Marcy, great job. Yeah. Thank you for joining us today. There's a lot of good things happening. We just want to make them happen faster. That's all.
We do. There's more to be done, a lot. Thanks so much for speaking with me, and we welcome having folks join us in this important movement.
You got it. We'll be in touch. That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, the latest from the Ohio Federation of Teachers and the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.